It's 2023, but the subject of the conversation is still Mercedes Moné and where is she going to turn up? Could it be AEW tomorrow night? We're going to talk about that and everything else in today's episode of Wrestle Extra. Stay tuned.
Yo, this is Wrestle Extra and this is 2023. I'm your boy, A Dazzle, the Black Wrestling Advocate, always joined by my tag team partner, Mex, the WrestleManiac, if you will. And as well, we are here with the professor that is Gerard Bonner. Guys, first of all, Happy New Year. How was your Christmas? How was your New Year? How's your year started? Mex, I'm going to go to you first with that one.
I'm good. I feel rejuvenized and, you know, certain things I want to accomplish this year as well. And, you know, putting those in place. And in terms of wrestling news, I literally think we've started with the same chaos that 2022 was with, you know, new signings turning up places, a certain McMahon trying to force his way back in somewhere. I think this year is going to be very, very interesting, and it's only been 10 days. So,
10 days. Gerard, how are you? How was your Christmas? How was your New Year? What are you seeing for this year in 2022?
Man, well, Christmas and New Year's were pretty cool. I was in Jamaica for Christmas, I figured you guys would appreciate that.
Yeah, man.
And so, so that was fun. My very first Christmas in Jamaica. So good times. I'm expecting an amazing year for us. And certainly for all that we're doing in this sport, and the sport is crazy right now. I really feel like, and we'll dig into some stuff, but I feel like the last 6 years have really been newsworthy every single year. And it seems like every time you think you've hit the most in 1 year, the next year goes top that. So I think that's going to be kind of what we're looking at. I think it's going to be another crazy, unpredictable year, but we'll be here to bring it all to you.
Wow. And this is what we're here to do. And the first thing we're bringing to you, of course, you know, the year started with the anticipated arrival of a one formerly known as Sasha Banks to Japan. It was probably the worst kept secret of 2023, even of 2022, to be fair, because that's when the rumors all kind of started and kicked off and we were expecting it. But it happened. And Mercedes Moné turned up at Wrestle Kingdom 17 to confront the IWGP Women's Champion Kairi, formerly Kairi Sane in WWE. Mex, how did you feel when you saw Moné come through those curtains, walk down the ramp, you know, walk into the ring and do what she did to Sane and say what she needed to say?
You know what? I was a big fan of her in WWE, and I still think, you know, there's unfinished business there, and I do think we'll see her back there one day. But it was almost like, as a fan of hers, like something left me. Like when she walked out, something good. Like, I guess it's the stress of like, oh, where is she and where is she gonna turn back up? It's like it had been alleviated, and we knew she was gonna, you know, appearing in New Japan and pretty much in the fashion she did straight after the women's match to challenge Kairi. And it's just awesome. Like, I think as well, coming into the new year and everything I was saying in terms of making resolutions and what you want to achieve and, you know, what has actually become a very infamous podcast now, her and Stone Cold Steve Austin, that Broken Skull.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff she said there has literally come to fruition within, you know, the last less than a year. Nine months, maybe, in terms of what she wants to achieve, how much she values herself, how she won't be prepared to, you know, just be eating catering anymore. She wants to eat steak like Vince McMahon. She never knew she'd ever make it in WWE. Japan was her target. If not Japan, Mexico. We're literally watching someone's dreams play out, like exactly how they thought. you know, and it's quite commendable to kind of see that, you know, she's taken this bet on herself. It's not to say WWE probably didn't offer her something. We heard that they did. It wasn't up to what she wanted, and she's bet on herself and she's gone elsewhere. And here she was, you know, this woman gallivanting in Japan alongside her mates. I thought it was super cute to have like the likes of Naomi, Bayley flying in literally from, you know, just being on Raw to kind of support her in those moments. You know, I'm very happy for her. I'm happy that she's happy. Like I said, she's probably still got unfinished business in the West, in America, whether it's in WWE or maybe AEW, she might end up there. But yeah, all for just being happy and achieving what you want to achieve. So I'm good with it.
Most def. And as always, with Mercedes, there's always kind of like, you know, the good and the bad when it comes to the reactions on Twitter and stuff like that. Not everything kind of went smoothly as she wanted to. You know, the little move that she pulled on Kyrie didn't quite go that great. You know, she's come out, you know, we're very used to the big pop being, you know, the thing that establishes or, you know, or cements your comeback. And obviously the Japanese crowd are a lot quieter, a lot more subdued. So a lot of fans, a lot of American fans and or from around the world were kind of playing it down a little bit. Gerard, how did you find those things there? So like, you know, the quiet crowd or the quieter crowd, should I say, you know, the move not quite going so well. Do you feel it hindered her comeback in any way for you?
Not at all. I literally was up at 3:30 in the morning watching this as it happened and literally popped out of my bed because I knew this was going to be the second match. It's crazy. I feel bad for Tam Nakano in all of this, right? Like, she was the opponent for Kyrie and nobody thought about her. The match was 5 minutes long, which I mean, is a blink of an eye in Wrestle Kingdom world, you know, because we were all waiting for after the match. I think we all kind of knew how this was going to go down. None of those things ruined the moment for me, because for me, the moment was seeing Mercedes Moné show up somewhere outside of WWE. You know, rumors being what they are, truth be told, we don't know that a rumor is true until it actually happens. And so all the talk about New Japan, maybe, maybe not, how would it work, et cetera, et cetera, to see her there was massive. Now, again, a lot of American fans don't get, you know, because most don't follow what's been happening over in New Japan, but there were multiple things happening at one time. First of all, this was the first event since COVID where the fans were actually allowed to verbally cheer. So they don't understand this concept that, you know, these fans literally sat in a mask and would clap literally for 2 years. They wouldn't say anything audibly. And it was the second match on the main card, which says this: you don't break out of a new habit that early. You just don't. You don't. The third thing that has been said, which I kind of agree with, is they said that many of them didn't actually know who she was, because just like most American fans don't follow Japanese wrestling, a lot of Japanese fans don't follow American wrestling, specifically WWE. So you had all of those things happening. And I think people failed to realize New Japan did not do this for the fans in Tokyo.
No,
they did this for everybody else around the world.
Right.
So they could care less what the fans in Tokyo had to say. They wanted to see what was going to happen on Twitter. What was going to how many people, new subscriptions were they going to have on NJPW World? And how many tickets would they end up selling for Battle in the Valley? Well, all of those things were check marks. WK17 was the number one trend worldwide on Twitter. I don't know if that's ever happened for Wrestle Kingdom before. So thank you, Mercedes Moné. Right. Then on top of that, you have apparently the venue that they were doing in San Jose for this Battle in the Valley has like 2,100 seats available. Before this thing happened, only 1,500 seats were sold. After this happened, an immediate 400 seats were sold. So basically, you now almost have a sellout from this woman just showing up. Check mark. That's a win.
Just to interrupt, it's sold out now. The event
is sold out now.
And she's the only match. Her and Kyrie's the only match announced.
The only match announced. So when you're talking about whether or not this actually worked, it absolutely did. And it did what New Japan wanted it to do, which was to get our eyes on their product. So it was an absolute win. No way. And yes, the move didn't happen the way it was supposed to, but that was also because she had 5-inch heels on, right? You can't do wrestling move with 5-inch thick heels on. Just doesn't work. And the promo, none of that overshadowed the visual of her there. The entrance was magical. The promo video was magical. The photos that have come out of there, incredible.
Phenomenal.
It is a massive win. And, you know, to Mex's point, I love this story because, you know, someone around here created a t-shirt for me that said "Bet on You." And that is exactly what she did. Maybe she has a t-shirt floating around somewhere. But that's exactly what she chose to do. And so when you hold out on WWE, decide to go act, decide to become a model, decide to check off everything on your own personal list, and then go to Japan and negotiate $100K an appearance, ma'am, are winning. So, yeah, I applaud her totally. And the folks that don't get it, it's okay. They'll be all right because they're going to go buy tickets or watch the pay-per-view in February.
Right. Very, very true. Very true. I mean, when I posted the news and I'm seeing the comments that I'm getting and reading and stuff, you know, there was one or two people that were like, you know, oh, you know, WWE messed up, they missed the trick, all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, you know what? Let's be very real here. You know, Mercedes could have stayed in WWE. I'm sure, you know, there were many little things that probably needed to be negotiated and stuff like that, whether it be money, whether it be certain clauses and whatever else. But I truly believe that very early on, from when she left and was doing her modeling and, you know, still doing acting and stuff and all that kind of thing, she knew it was her chance to do something different. And as Mex has already said, you know, in that podcast with Stone Cold, she already mentioned, you know, Japan and Mexico were places she wanted to go and all this kind of stuff. And she knew for a fact that she could do this on her own terms. So I don't think it would have mattered how much WWE were offering her. I think she still would have taken this opportunity to do this now. I don't think it would have happened any better way at a later date. Even earlier, it was the perfect time for her to do it. And I, you know, for me, this isn't a mess up by WWE. It's a strike for Mercedes. She's like, right, I'm going for this. This is my time. I'm going to negotiate, and I can negotiate a ludicrous amount of money. It's happened, and she's proven why with the tickets being sold out. There you go. Like there's nothing. It's almost like there's nothing else to prove. I don't care how the match goes. I don't care how long it is. I don't care who wins. I don't care how many botches there might be or there might not be. She's done what she's there to do. And it doesn't really matter, you know, what the fans think and how subdued the Tokyo crowd was and whether the move went quite right and all the rest of it. She's done what she's needed to do and capitalized on in the most perfect way she possibly could.
Like Gerard was saying, she has not been this is an acquisition for the Western audience. For her first match in New Japan to be in San Jose in America.
If that
doesn't tell you everything.
Exactly.
You see what I mean? And we know that New Japan are on a mission for this Western expansion. You know, they had a good go at it before the pandemic, and then the pandemic happened and AEW happened, which took a lot of those stars that were helping to bridge that gap. You know, this is, a second attempt at it, and now they've forged that relationship with AEW, so it's only going to help. They're bringing New Japan Strong to an end, so I've heard this week, which is interesting with that move in mind. But she is literally a tool, like to a marketing tool for them to have a foothold in America. And I think the sooner people see that and understand that, the better. And, you know, this is still someone that respects the culture, even though it is, you know, for more of an American product or Western audience. You know, she's been in the dojos in Japan. Like, she's not, you know, coming over like I'm the big I am and just put me into, you know, your events. Like, she's been training with these women. She's been doing drills with the likes of Miko Satomura for for a while. Like, even before she came back to WWE, you know, when she left the first time after her and Bailey and stuff. Like, this is a someone that understands the culture, has wanted to be a part of this for a minute, and she's been waiting for WWE to mess up one more time so that she can that basically, you know, go and fulfill her dreams. And you know, she's negotiated out of her deal. And here she is. And like we were saying, you know, this could, and she said this in the press conference after her appearance in Wrestle Kingdom, this is the first stop of many. Like, she is going to make other stops along the way in this wrestling world. Like, this is just the first stop being New Japan or being Wrestle Kingdom. So this is a move for on a much bigger scale and not just, you know, Japan focused.
Right. And what's interesting makes you talk about, you know, Japan trying to get a foothold over in America and stuff like that. Obviously, we saw, you know, the success that was Forbidden Door for one, you know, and obviously they've got this relationship with AEW. Just literally minutes after Mercedes made this return, we knew of a tag team match that was supposed to happen on AEW with Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter against Saraya and a mystery opponent. Now, Twitter went mad and everyone was, you know, everyone was speculating it's going to be Sasha Banks, it's going to be Mercedes Moné, or it might be Mandy Sachs, Mandy Rose. Obviously, that didn't happen. And it was the biggest letdown in wrestling, and probably will be the biggest one for 2023. But there is still this chance, given the relationships between you know, the two companies, given, you know, the fact that you just said, you know, Mercedes is ready to make a you know, a number of stops. What do you think, or how high is this possibility or probability of Moné turning up in AEW?
Personally, I think it's still very high. And I personally still think it's still very high for it to be tomorrow. So yes, the Toni Storm thing was announced as a Saraya's partner. And good on AEW for, you know, if they can't get Mercedes Moné, don't let people dream and get into Wednesday this week and start booing when Toni Storm comes out as a surprise guest. They've done the right, they've done the right thing, even though it is still a bit underwhelming because you did hype it up somewhat. However, in the same segment, they've almost set up Saraya shunning what's her name? Shida.
Hikaru Shida,
Shida. So I still think, you know, and this might be a bit fantasy booking-ish of me, but I still think there is room for maybe Shida to attack Toni Storm backstage. And it's like, oh, I still need a partner. And we get Moné, you know. So I still think they could be called like a double bluff sort of thing.
That'd be nice.
If it's not Wednesday, then, you know, with the relationship with New Japan, Forbidden Door, she will, if they do Forbidden Door 2, Mercedes Moné, they probably put the title on her, A Battle in the Valley, in February. So come the time we have Forbidden Door in the middle of this year, if we get Forbidden Door 2, her versus an AEW women's champion, or you know, something like her versus Shida or something like that could be incredible. And she can make her AEW debut indirectly that way as a New Japan talent. Yeah, I still think it's very, very much on the cards. And her hinting that, you know, this is one stop of many, I think it only, you know, starts getting you just wondering about, okay, what are these other stops involved?
Gerard, what are you thinking? Could there be possibilities of her in AEW and any other promotions, you know, of any type of notoriety, even maybe some of, you know, the bigger indie promotions?
You know, I think it's going to get really interesting. I think most of us are trained to think other stops as AEW because right. in our head, that's the other big place. Yeah. But I think at the space that Mercedes is in, she's interested in competition and opportunity and money.
Right.
All three of those. Right. And so I'm sure at least two of the three would have to check off of the list. If she shows up in AEW, and I think that's a bigger if than not, I'm of the mindset. Well, let me finish that thought. If she shows up in AEW, I don't see her showing up as a regular. I see her showing up as a special attraction because if she stays for any period of time, they have to put the belt on her. There's no, this woman does not show up and just do random matches on a weekly basis in she's not fighting a number one contenders match. You're not putting her in the match with the brass ring and the ladder. Like, you're not doing that for her. She's Mercedes Moné. You're going to pay her to show up and she'll be a mystery opponent to fight for a world title. So with that said, I actually think one of the reasons why they announced Toni Storm last week was to be able to completely kill the idea of Mercedes Moné because they couldn't get her. I think that's the case. And I think that now, granted, I know they want that LA show to be big. And, you know, there are enough factors right now in there that make it big. Saraya having a match is big because I think this is her first official match on Dynamite. Yeah, you know, so it's a big deal in and of itself. Toni Storm is a former world champion. I mean, you have a big situation there. I don't think that they want that idea of Moné showing up, hanging over them right now, because to Mex's point, it'll backfire. It'll backfire if she doesn't show up. So I think they tried to quell that. Where else she could show up? I easily see her showing up in Mexico.
Yeah.
Easily. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think it's a bucket list thing for her that she feels like she has to do that still has prestige for her. I think this will shock people. I think it'll shock the world if she shows up in Impact. And I know people would be like,
would
what?
Shock the world.
It would shock the world. But Impact historically has had one of the best women's divisions in this business. Historically. So I think for her, because here's what I think. I think she wants to show up somewhere and bring notoriety with her.
That's what I think.
AEW doesn't need that. New Japan, she could easily see how they build a whole lot around her. Impact, they'd build an awful lot around her. And again, she doesn't have to come in and be a regular. She can come in and do a one-off, show up like a Brock Lesnar would, you know? And people would go nuts. Think about the pay-per-view buy rates that would go crazy if you managed to put together Taya versus Mercedes in an Impact ring.
That's a dream.
Do you see what I'm saying? I mean, or her and Tasha Steeles. You know, like there are possibilities in Impact that are must-see more so than in AEW. So that's why I think, you know, Mexico and Impact, and it would shock the world.
It's very easy, actually, now that you put it that way. It's very easy for me to think, because you've still even got Mickey James is on this, you know, retirement tour thing as well.
Can you imagine that?
Moné was the last one. As much as she's facing Jordan Grace for the Knockouts Championship, Moné would still be a bigger match, would certainly be a bigger match than that.
Absolutely.
Sure. And as you said, you know, you've got Taya, you've got Jordan Grace, you've got Tasha Steeles. There are options right there. It would be crazy and quite easy to do as a kind of like a one-time thing. AEW, again, yes, it would have to be a short-term, maybe some short-term program. She wins, you know, the AEW championship maybe, and she's there for a couple of months maybe. And then obviously, you know, Mexico again is one of those kind of one-off, Triple Mania maybe, or, you know, one of those shows. It's very easily done. So she has so many options that obviously she definitely wouldn't have had if she stayed and returned to WWE. I don't think there would be much for her to do in WWE if she stayed. You know, we've got Bianca Belair's doing her own thing. Charlotte's come back. Ronda Rousey, let's get rid of her. You know, who else is, you know, you got Becky Lynch and Bayley, of course, but then she's done that.
Right.
You know, a feud between any of them would be great. Of course it would, but it's been done. So then what else is there for her to really do that's going to feel like she's making a difference? Mm-hmm. It's not really going to happen in WWE. So she's made the perfect choice. And given herself, you know, the say-so in what she does from now on. Mick, you mentioned very, very early on, you know, there's a, you know, strong chance we'll see her back in WWE. How long do you think this time away will have to be or will be?
This is the conundrum. Because, you know, as well as, you know, doing... popping up in certain things, and we can, you know, sit here as wrestling fans and plan, okay, well, Forbidden Doors in X amount of months, and, you know, Hard to Kill is next year, and this and that, and looking at pay-per-views and seeing where she could pop up. And we have to then mix that with her other commitments that she's taken on, acting and other bits of business that she may be doing. So you can never really tell how long this will take and how long it takes to get this out of her system.
Yeah,
that part.
You know, they always kind of say, oh, you know, people go away. And they said this with Moxley. I remember them saying with when Jonathan Goodman left that, you know, this is just an itch he wants to scratch and he'll come back and he ain't coming back. But, you know, someone like Mercedes could be more inclined to come back. I believe her husband still works in the company backstage. So, yeah, this it could still be... some time, some years, you know. But you know, to be honest, it's only gonna make her shout for the paycheck she wants,
right?
Big,
right.
When it is time to go back, it's like, okay, what are we doing? You know, the ball's in her court. How are you bringing me back in? What's the creative looking like? What's the paycheck looking like? I want a tour bus or whatever they ask for in their contracts as well. I want to not work every house show that's available, and you know. God willing, by the time she's going back, she's going to have that kind of power to tailor such a great deal for herself. She would have deserved it. But yeah, I still think we're a couple years now that we're getting into motion. We're a couple of years off that.
Yeah, for sure. Hopefully she'll come back in almost like this Brock Lesnar situation to where, you know, it's like, you know, 5-6 appearances a year, if that.
Yeah.
With a ridiculous amount of money, and you know, she'll have done whatever she needed to do in order to get there. If we get back to that, now the other thing that you know is very tightly connected to Mercedes Moné is obviously now the situation with Naomi. Now there has been talk that she's you know possibly returning very soon to WWE. Gerard, do you think this is her best move? Does she have other options? Is this her only option? How does she come back?
You know, this is a tough one. It's tough because, I have to say this very carefully, but I think the way it's always been when you've looked at Naomi and Sasha, I think people have generally looked at Sasha as the bigger star, and I put that in quotes. Not that Naomi isn't a star, but what's scary to me is I think Naomi has discovered her star since leaving WWE. So the question now becomes, what are you willing to pay me?
Right.
But just as important is how are you willing to position me? I think if Naomi comes back at the Royal Rumble, and end up coming back in the same way that she's come back before, because she's made comebacks in the Royal Rumble before, and she gets the great, you know, she is the female Kofi of the Royal Rumble, where you use her for highlight reels to figure out how can she get back in, but she never ends up at the end. I think this is going to be bold. If Naomi comes back, she has to win the Royal Rumble. If she comes back, has to win the Royal. If she's going to come back at Rumble, she's got to win the Royal Rumble and find herself in a main event spot at WrestleMania. What people are forgetting was that her last prominent singles match was against Charlotte Flair for the SmackDown Women's title, and it was one of the best matches of that given year.
Yes, it was.
And so we know Naomi can go. We know Naomi can get it done. Naomi does not need to be saddled in a faction. She does not need to be a part of anybody's tag team. It's time to let her glow for real, for real. And, you know, that's the thing. And I know some people are like, let her join the Bloodline. I think she only ends up in the Bloodline if she is dominating. Do not bring her back and have her just, you know, smiling and kissing babies. That day is over. Okay. She didn't just walk out to walk out. She walked out because there's something that she needs to accomplish that WWE wasn't giving her the opportunity to do. So I think if she comes back, it's got to be a massive comeback that has a long run, a long successful run that makes us go, this is worth it. Other than that, I think she could go to AEW and find some success there. And I think AEW or Impact might be a better fit for her if they're going to put her at the top of the card. I'm always nervous. I hate to say, but I'm always nervous about AEW these days because their track record has been proven in terms of what happens when you get stars from other companies and bring them in, particularly women, you know, it doesn't bode well. So for her, I think obviously WWE, it'd be dope to see her in Japan, actually. Like, that'd be amazing because they don't have very many of us as females in Japan, you know? So it'd be good. But if she's coming back to WWE, it has to be top tier. I mean, win the Royal Rumble, win her WrestleMania match and become a champion and have a dominant run. That's what's got to happen.
And I think for me, that has to be the one clause or the main thing for Naomi to negotiate when it comes to coming back to WWE. If it's a thing where she comes in, there's this big pop, and, you know, if it is the Royal Rumble, even if it's just on SmackDown or Raw or whatever else, and then within like a few weeks it fizzles out again, it would, that whole time away would have been for absolutely nothing, because that's happened for her over and over again. There has to be something different. And as you said, Gerard, you know, her last match was against Charlotte Flair. That was an absolutely amazing match. There was all this talk as well before they before her and Banks left, that they were going to, you know, face the Raw and SmackDown Women's Champions as well at the time. That was going to happen. I don't know whether that was going to become anything, but it just felt, it did feel as though that wasn't going to be a big thing. So she has to come back in some type of prominent position. In terms of her going to other companies, Impact, yes, all day long. I think she would kill it. She'd have to be there for at least a year, maybe, to kind of go through the roster and you know, defeat other women, go in a few big matches and stuff like that. AEW again, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. We've seen what happened with Athena. We've seen, as much as Toni Storm became, you know, the AEW interim women's champion, the whole thing a little bit, you know, didn't play out quite well. I wouldn't want to see her in AEW because I just wouldn't feel comfortable. I feel on edge the whole time. So I don't want, I don't want my heart to deal with that. I'm getting old. You know what I mean? I can't. for me, she's very much a WWE girl, but then at the same time, they need to now really respect who she is. And absolutely, and for me, that's what it is with her.
I feel I've just, like, AEW and Impact for me, and to be honest, anywhere else, Japan, Mexico, like, I don't see it at all. I think she's very much, you know, within WWE, and I expect her to go back to work and go to WWE. I've actually been saying for about a month now that the winner of the Women's Royal Rumble should be Naomi, or who it seems they're going to re-debut as Asuka, maybe in a form of her previous character, Kana. There's nobody else. And people say Rhea Ripley, and I hear the Rhea Ripley argument. However, for me, in my fantasy booking land, Rhea Ripley has been posed as more of a big, strong, dominant threat. So I would want her to win the Elimination Chamber. Yeah. Be dominant inside the structure, like the elimination chamber, and then get to Bianca Belair that way.
Right.
Royal Rumble.
I don't think Rhea Ripley needs that. There are some people who win the Royal Rumble because they almost need it. It's like that's their big push.
Yeah.
Instead of having them go through a number of superstars in matches. Whereas, you know, the Royal Rumble is kind of like the easier way to do it. You know, it's the quicker way to do that. I really don't, Rhea Ripley doesn't need it. I wouldn't be upset if she won. But at the same time, I don't think she needs it. She's already at that place where she should be.
And she
should be the one literally breathing down her neck right now.
Right. Yeah. Right.
This, and all this Uncle Howdy, Bray Wyatt madness and whatever else. It really should be Rhea, but you know, maybe we're saving that up until, you know, WrestleMania comes or whatever else.
Ripley's on a major like heel run right now, and like winning the Rumble and everyone cheering for you, it might derail it a bit and then send people, you know, into two different sides. If she's going into a program with Bianca, then it's like, who are we cheering and stuff like that? We can already see, like, from, you know, last night or whatever, that Judgment Day are getting over as a bit kind of cool heels now, cool goofy heels and stuff like that. So we have to tread that line carefully. Let her be dominant in somewhere like Elimination Chamber, which is still destructive, and she can cause chaos and win and still be a dominant heel going in against Bianca. Like, Naomi should come back, and if they are brave, if they have to be brave and trust her and book it, you know, I wouldn't even half mind, because it looks like Charlotte Flair is going to be a face character now, which I'm intrigued to see, to be honest. It's something different that they haven't done with her. Like, I don't even mind if, obviously, the night Naomi does return at the Rumble, she gets the big pop and plays into it and wins the Rumble, and the first night back on TV, she turns. And it is more like a thing where, well, you guys weren't shouting my name. You're all supporting my friend that's killing it in Japan now. But, you know, you didn't support me. Who was asking for me? And it's almost like that bitter, like, where was my fans and all of that kind of stuff. And then she goes after Charlotte that way. And like Gerard said, she beats Charlotte for the title at WrestleMania. Like, do something different with her character if you think the glow thing is, you know, played out or, you know, past its sell-by date. The fact that they didn't see any value in Sasha Banks anymore, and they said that Sasha Banks is, you know, basically we've reached our peak. She's peaked. Like, what are you talking about? Like, but there is still, you know, I always think it's a crime that the likes of Naomi's been in WWE for like 11 years now, maybe, and held the title twice.
Right.
Like, that's just a crime, man. Like, fix up, fix the situation, and this is your opportunity to.
Yeah. It has to happen now. There needs to be that level of respect, and, you know, for Naomi moving forward when she returns. Because as Mick said, I don't really see her being anywhere else. Impact could work, but I don't really see her being anywhere else apart from in the WWE, and it just needs to be done the right way. Moving on from this one, but keeping with this whole thing where, you know, we've when it comes to Naomi, we've talked so many times about her, you know, being part of the Bloodline. You know, way back we were talking about her being part of the Hurt Business. Speaking of the Hurt Business, we have now seen this direct interaction now, finally, with MVP and Bobby Lashley. It happened backstage on Raw last night. You know, MVP was the one that kind of negotiated with Adam Pearce to get, you know, to lift Bobby Lashley's suspension a little bit earlier and all this kind of stuff. But then Bobby Lashley has turned down MVP's offer to join the Hurt Business. MVP has already mentioned, you know, that he's kind of got Shelton Benjamin and Cedric back on side, even posting a little reel where we had the two of them behind him. He sent that directly to me as well. I was like, all right, I got to post this then. All right, fair enough.
Wow.
So, you know, we're seeing that happening. It's very clear. It's very clear that we're going to get this Hurt Business come back. But we're going to have to wait a few weeks for Bobby Lashley to change his mind, or for some way. Now, I believe we're seeing some kind of friction with the Bloodline. Do you feel that that's the way that, you know, Bobby Lashley has to bring in the numbers, and that's how we're getting the Hurt Business come back?
I actually think it's going to be a frustration around this U.S. title. Mm. I think it'll be a frustration around that and all things Adam Pearce, where he finally realizes, you know what? I've been the nice guy. Nobody's coming to help me. All of this nice stuff hasn't. Because think about it. He's already started being the aggressive Bobby Lashley that was in the Hurt Business. Mm-hmm. Now it's just, let me go back, you know, to my roots. Let me go back to being myself, because there's no reason that an Austin Theory should ever beat a Bobby Lashley, right? And so if some kind of foolishness happens around this U.S. title where now he goes, okay, it's time to get the band back together, because when the band was together, I had the U.S. title. Then, you know, I had the world title. Like, so it's, I think we're seeing the seeds there. And I don't know if it's going to be, I don't think it has to be attached to the bloodline. I think there are a number of other things that are potentially happening around this U.S. title picture that could make it the thing where he just, it may not even be gangs against him. It may be, what do I need to do to get that advantage again? I know how, let me get my guys, you know? Or the flip side to it could be, he could literally like be knocked out or something in this match, and they just come in and attack Austin Theory, you know, without his knowledge. And then he wins the title and is just like, what happened here? And then finally figures out, oh, welcome home, guys.
Have we had that before? We've had that before with the Hurt Business, right? Or was that the way they broke up, to where he was in a match and they interrupted and he didn't necessarily
interrupted and it didn't work, and then it ended up causing them to break up. I think it's gonna, I think it could cause them to come back together, but either way, I got excited when I saw that. Like, I'm just like, oh my god, it's happening. Triple H is writing another thing. Thank you, sir. Please do it as long as you can. Please.
I want it to happen so bad, but I'm just trying to think of the dynamics. Obviously, Omos is probably someone that joins them if they've got room for him. And I'm thinking of, obviously, Young Blood in Carmelo Hayes down in NXT. Like, how do we get him involved? Because I would love to see him involved. But like, who is like, we've got the heavyweight guy in Bobby Lashley, but he's treated like the mid-carder going after the US title. And then Carmelo should be that guy in the middle chasing those mid-card titles. So the dynamics are a bit off. Maybe they don't just... Maybe it's just the original guys, the original band getting back together. It'll be interesting to see. But yeah, they need to do it.
I think something that could happen, maybe over a little bit of a long period, maybe in a short space of time, to be honest, is they get back together as the originals, the original four. And then whether it be Bobby or MVP... decides that either Cedric or Shelton just don't fit anymore. They get rid of them and then bring in someone new. That someone new being, you know, could be Carmelo. It could be one of the Street Profits, probably both. There are actually a couple of guys that could be, you know, whether it be Carmelo and Trick Williams or just one of them. I think for me, that would kind of be a nice way to do it. To bring someone in straight away, or, you know, as part of this new Hurt Business reformed Hurt Business, I can't think of how they would do that when we're not seeing it happening at the moment. I think we'd have to see something happening now before they actually reform completely. But, you know, who knows over time. But at the same time, I still feel as though they've still got plans for Carmelo in NXT at the moment. There still looks like something's still happening with him. So hopefully that's an NXT championship. Until then, I don't know.
Yeah, it feels like they've been hinting at some things with Carmelo. Carmelo, once we came into this year, it's the first time we've actually heard him mention the NXT championship. He hadn't uttered those words this whole time. So that made me think, oh no, there are plans for that. The other thing that we haven't talked about, but that could end up being an opportunity for Lashley, is this. Did you guys notice on Raw last night? It was the first time since May that they mentioned the Raw Tag Team Championships.
Yeah, it looks like they split them.
So I found that to be very interesting, which maybe I'm just extrapolating too far, but perhaps that also means we'll now start the talk of the separation between the WWE and the Universal Championships. Right. If that happens, we now can throw Lashley potentially in that world title picture again, which then kind of rights this whole ship when it comes to the Hurt Business. So that's another possibility as well. A lot of possibilities, which how crazy could this be? If indeed that's the case, then come WrestleMania, we may not have a defense of the Undisputed Championship. We might have Roman or whomever defending both titles, one each night. And that could make way for Lashley to come in and fight for the title.
That would be interesting, actually. That would be interesting. Would. And very doable, actually.
Yeah.
Both titles over two nights.
Mm-hmm.
They've spoken about it. They're trying to figure out a way how to do it. That's the thing. It's like this way that they've done the tag team, I think, is incredibly lazy. You've been calling it the Undisputed title. Now, all of a sudden, you mentioned just the Raw tag team titles last night.
So weird.
And then when the Judgment Day had the face-off with the Usos were holding both titles, but they only held up the Raw.
So, very interesting.
For me, given this whole tag team thing, I think it should just be one belt over the two brands, to be honest. It's not like there's a whole lot of tag teams, you know what I mean? It should just be the one belt defended over the two brands and leave it at that. But it is what it is. Wrestling logic isn't logic. So,
it's bored.
We're used to that. We're used to that by now. Moving away from WWE and going back to another female, we saw the celebration, we've celebrated Jade Cargill. Passing 365 days, obviously a year now, as the TBS champion. The one question I'm going to ask about this one, I won't stay on this subject too long. The one question I'm going to ask about this one, how have you felt about the TBS championship run over this year? Mex, I'm going to go to you first.
Well, it's got to be said, she's the greatest TBS champion ever. She's absolutely the greatest.
Brilliant.
No, nobody compares.
Brilliant.
No, she's the only person to hold the title. She's the only person to hold it for 365 days plus. So
longest
reign ever. Yes. She is the best. She is the best. But you know what? It started off very well. As always, it always seems the run to the title is stuff that captivates everyone.
Yeah.
And you start dreaming, wow, this person's going to win it. And then she won it. Yeah. And then, you know, they were handling it very, very well. I think it got towards the middle of the year and it was just like, okay, not necessarily how is she going to lose it, but where is the trouble going to come in? The usual crisis of confidence, or now she's got her cronies and the baddies. How are they going to be saving her to ensure she keeps this title? Mm. And none of that happened. It looked like we were kind of lining up Statlander. Stat got injured. The baddies have been nothing but eye candy and nothing to really aid the act of Jade. They haven't propped her up. They haven't saved her. If anything, they've caused her so much trouble. I'm always thinking, why do you still have these girls around you? I think more than anything now, the streak is becoming a bit of a burden and they're not sure how to handle her as champion and have a streak, possibly take the belt off her, but it'll then ruin the streak. They probably kind of got themselves into a bit of a corner at the minute. The red velvet thing that we're seeing nowadays, to be honest, I never understood how Red Velvet became a baddie, because Red Velvet was probably her first feud, Jade's first feud when she came out. So I don't know how they became friends in the first place. Listen, it's been good overall. Definitely places it could have improved, and you know, but that's with the division as a whole. But I think we just need to start tweaking, you know, making things a bit harder for her. Or if we're looking to take it off her, how we're going to do that and still keep her dominant.
Gerard, your take?
Well, to add to the accolades of Mex, she is the longest reigning women's champion of any kind in AEW. She is the longest reigning champion of any kind in AEW. No one in AEW history has held a title longer than Jade Cargill. What has really worked with this is because it's been a new championship and a relatively new wrestler, we've watched them both grow simultaneously.
Right.
So we have associated the TBS championship with Jade Cargill. What's probably different with this versus the TNT championship is with the TNT title, we've obviously seen more title changes, more title reigns, and more people that we felt like could become TNT champion. With the TBS title, we've not seen anybody that we go, yeah, that'll make a good TBS champion. Oh, yeah, they'll beat Jay. That's not the case. So where I think they may have backed themselves into a corner in this last year is if this was supposed to be a mid-card championship, either you don't really have a mid-card or the people who you had there are just, like, for instance, Battle of the Belts, her and Sky Blue. Like, Now, granted, I think it was one of Jade's best matches, without question. But nobody went into it because the whole idea of these title matches is you're supposed to at least feel like the champion has a possibility of losing. You know, nobody feels like that when you see her against Sky Blue. So I don't know who they're going to have to bring in or raise up that could potentially take out Jade. And I also don't think they planned on Jade becoming more popular than the world champion.
Is that
So that's the other problem in here. So how has it gone? I think it's been great for Jade. She's become a massive star. It's somewhat elevated the TBS title. I think she's bigger than that title at this point. And they've purposely kept her from the world title for obvious reasons. But at this point, I think it's been a good run for her. She's become a better wrestler. She's become a better personality. You know, the closest danger they gave her was when they had her name is escaping me, Nyla Rose, steal the belt from her. Like, if that's the best thing you can do, eek. Ooh, I'm stealing your title. Wow, that's a threat. You know, and then she's got to come in and why can't y'all get my belt back for me? So she's knocking down, you know, male security guards to get her belt back. The great way to make her look weak against a woman. Not going to happen. Right. So Jade is a special commodity. And I think if anybody else had that TBS title, they would have lost it for sure. In these 300, a long, long time ago. So I think it's been a great run for her. And I don't see it ending anytime soon.
No, and that's the thing. It's been a very weird year in terms of like the way it's all flowed. Jade has definitely made the most of her opportunity and the situation. But you know, as we've just mentioned already, like we've gone from Jade being green, given this new championship, to then becoming bigger than the world, the women's world champion. Yeah. And then becoming bigger than the belt she's holding. That is just weird. It is very different, very different. And again, it's testament to Jade herself.
Absolutely.
Most definitely, again, for making the most of her opportunity. But now it's, as Mech said, it's this conundrum where, you know, she's got this streak, she's got this belt. She has to lose both of them in order to move on.
Right.
It's not the easiest way to go. There's no one to kind of, you know, put in that place or that we believe should be there, or is believable to beat Jade. So we're struggling a little bit. She will hold it for a little longer, but for me, one of my predictions for 2023, I do actually see her winning the world, the AEW Women's Championship. I do see that. How it's going to happen, I have no idea whatsoever, but I do see that happening. Or it needs to happen.
You see her winning the title this year, the women's championship this year.
Yeah. At some point. I do. I almost feel as though it needs to happen, like for both Jade and for the women's championship. How they do it, whether they do is another thing. But I just feel as though for me, the only person for me that will bring not necessarily a prestige in the sense of like a technical wrestler, blah blah blah. But just to bring the star power to the Women's Championship? There's only her.
I think I agree.
Mm-hmm.
I agree that, you know, she needs to be elevated to that level.
Right.
Is it a bit soon? Possibly.
Possibly.
I'm just thinking, who else is there in AEW that, you know, could win? Like right now, the way Jamie Hayter is moving, I can't even see her losing. Hayter's moving mad. Nuts with it. So I don't even see how she's gonna lose it. And now we're talking about two heel champions. Who's the face that can challenge either of these women? I mean, I think a lot of us have said that, you know, Willow Nightingale should probably be the person they build up to beat Jade, maybe. Like you said, Statlander was in the plans, but injury. A Ruby Soho, maybe. Wouldn't be my first choice. But for the women's title, to be honest, they might have to take that off for Jamie Hayter in like a multi-woman match or something where she's not picked.
But at the same time, you could have this whole thing. Obviously, you know, the crowd are so behind Jamie Hayter at the moment. She could turn, you know, face within time with, you know, Britt Baker maybe turning on her or something like that.
Yeah, that's then true.
Then Jade not having a championship, Jade's the one that comes in as the heel.
Yeah, challenge. That's true.
That's a possibility over time. It's not going to happen overnight. It's not going to happen in a couple of months. That's over time. So maybe that. To move away from this, just to make sure I throw this one in because it needs to happen. PWG. Boston Guerrilla had their Battle of Los Angeles over the weekend, a two-night spectacular tournament of some of wrestling's rising stars. And one of our favorites, Michael Oku, made his bowler debut. He was knocked out in the first round, unfortunately. But at the same time, he was given this, you know, this ovation from the fans. And we've got to, you have to understand as well, this isn't WWE fans. This isn't NXT in the little gym. This is like the crazy, hard to please fans of Los Angeles as well. And the PWG faithful who cheered a guy after he lost someone that they don't even know, throwing in money and chanting his name as well as please come back.
Yes.
This is the OJMO, Michael Oku from London. You know, a very humble guy doing his own little thing. You know, a very humble guy that kind of just about somehow, you know, got this 5-star rating from Uncle Dave when he faced Will Ospreay. It was almost a year ago, January 29th last year, I believe. You know, and then that was night one. Then night two, the big surprise of the evening, the Jericho Appreciation Society turned up at PWG. Full whack, all of them, every single one of them, all in gold glitter and all the rest of it.
Brilliant. Like,
it was amazing, perfect to who and what they're about. But then at the same time, this little young Nigerian kid somehow managed to steal the show in the sequence with the man himself, Chris Jericho, where he turned what they had this very crazy slow motion slap thing go on. And then, you know, Chris Jericho eventually put him into the Walls of Jericho. Oku's reversed it and turned it into his patented half crab, which was just a phenomenal scene to see. You know, as I said, this young Nigerian boy from London facing, you know, one of the greatest ever in Chris Jericho and stealing the show. And again, people go away talking about the JAS as a surprise act on over the weekend, Mike Bailey winning the tournament, but then also Michael Oku. There always seems to be, over the last 3 years, including this year, over the last 3 years, he always does one or two things that have people talking for like 2-3 weeks straight and just, you know, makes, when is it his time to kind of have that on a consistent basis to where he's, you know, here at these, you know, the more prominent indie promotions on a regular and stuff like that. Do you think 2023 is that year?
It's happening. It's definitely happening. It's in progress. like from the Ospreay match, and it's not to say that that was even the catapult, because that would be kind of doing him a disservice. He's even worked himself into that position. He was, I think, the longest reigning British junior heavyweight champion for Rev Pro at the time. Then he had the 5-star match, and he's been on radars ever since, you know, getting called up to come to Battle of LA. You know, being someone from London already is massive. You know, he was the only kind of UK representative on that show. And I think he said that that what that the match that he had, although he went out, was 6 years to the day he started wrestling. So it just shows how much he's accomplished in this time. Then obviously, like you said, he's in this multi-man match tangling up with Jericho on Sunday. And Meltzer comes out and says he's one of the performers of the weekend.
Right.
Like, and we already know PWG with, you know, I guess it's Excalibur's promotion, or he's got ties with it. It's already on the radar now of AEW.
Right.
You know, you never know where life leads you. If don't be surprised if you see Michael Oku doing darks and dark elevations to start start off if he comes in. I know he's got plans to be in LA over WrestleMania weekend, probably get some bookings there. So listen, it's a lot coming very soon, but he is more than ready for it. And you can see with every opportunity that's coming, he's knocking it down and he's stealing the headlines. Fantastic storyteller. Like, I can't believe when you watch his matches, especially live, you're just engrossed. Like, such a great storyteller. And yeah, definitely more to come from him.
Gerard, obviously you're there overseas in the US. How much do you know of Oku? How much have you got to know of Oku in recent times?
So it's funny, when I think about the breakout match that he had with Will Ospreay, it kind of reminds me of another breakout match that happened with Ospreay and Ricochet, you know, and I think we all have those moments where you see those matches and you go, that guy right there, you know, when it was Okada and Omega in that Wrestle Kingdom, you know, several years ago, where a lot of us went, whoa. I need New Japan in my life now. You know what I mean? Like, it was all of those things. So I think we're at a really special moment right now for Michael Oku, for him to get the call for Bola, to be in the ring with Chris Jericho. I don't think people understand. That's the first independent match Jericho has done since 2019, where he showed up at Southern Honor. You know, and before that, he hadn't done an indie match in 25 years. So for Jericho to be able to go, yeah, I'm coming to this, I'm bringing my crew, and we're going to make sure that we're in a spot, that says an awful lot about Michael Oku. And so for me, my radar is way up. And I'm sure that both AEW, WWE, all of those spaces are looking, especially now with WWE once again, you know, courting independent wrestlers and the like, you know, and then there's the potential of NXT Europe, whatever that's going to look like. I think the world is about to be very open to Michael Oku, and that is really exciting. And so for me, like, I'm literally following the guy, trying to check out what is his next move, because you're making this kind of noise. I feel like this, as long as he can, as long as he is mentally and emotionally prepared for everything that could potentially come with this, he could really have the breakout year this year. The thing that we've seen with other wrestlers is they are amazing in the ring, but if they can't handle the emotional and mental pressures that go with it, they fizzle out just as fast as they rose to prominence. So as long as he has systems in place to be able to handle those things, 2023 is going to be special for him.
And you know, as you said, you know, this breakout year, and I honestly thought it was going to happen last year, especially with the with it starting with that 5-star match. And yes, he did. You know, he made progress. It's not a, you know, it's not a thing where he fizzled out or, you know, got lazy or anything else, because he had matches in the US around summertime as well, defending his Rev Pro Cruiserweight Championship as well. So, you know, he's made progress. But I think for me now, this year has to be that year where there's more consistency to it. There's more, you know, we're talking about him a lot more often, not, you know, once or twice a year. We're doing it once or twice a month. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I think he's ready for that. It's just about, you know, how these opportunities come about. He's got the backing of Will Ospreay and has had that for the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. I think it's now time for, you know, for us to see the master of the half crab, Michael Oku, and everybody knowing the phrase, now we play.
We play, yes.
I need everyone to understand and hear that all the time.
Wow.
Know what it means when they hear those three words. And I think, yeah, I think 2023 is that year. We'll see. I've always been, you know, very much following every move that he makes. So, you know, as soon as I know, you'll know.
I used to go to a couple NXT tapings when they used to come over to London see Michael Oku in the crowd before I even knew. These times, he would have probably just been starting wrestling, maybe about a year or two in.
Wow.
I used to always see him because he's just one of a few black people in the crowd. So I can't miss him.
Yeah.
And now to see where he is incredible. Like,
it's amazing. Wow.
It's amazing. On that great note, this has been our time. You have been watching Wrestle Extra on the WrestleMania UK YouTube channel. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and click that notification bell just to make sure you get to see all the great stuff and videos from your guy, Mex, the WrestleManiac. Of course, we've got Gerard Bonner. Find him, you know, on everything that he does, WWT Live, Summon on a Wrestling, Battle Slam, The Faction Show.
Keep going.
Wrestle Extra.
Yes.
Anyway, there's more. I don't remember all of it. Follow him on The Faction Show, Bonafide as well. Follow this guy, Mex, WrestleManiac UK on Twitter, WrestleManiac.UK on Instagram. And of course, I'm your guy, A Dazzle. Follow me, Black Wrestling Alliance on Instagram, BWA Dazzle on Twitter. This has been our time. I want to keep talking, but I've got to go because you and I don't play football. So we've got to go. Sorry, folks. See you later, folks.
See you later, guys.